Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, continuing this special Father's Day edition with Martin Martinez of Velarde, New Mexico. This isn't certified by the Guinness Book or anything, but I'm pretty sure we can safely say that he has finished more concrete than anyone in the entire state of New Mexico. 70 years worth, all over that part of the country. You'll find an article about that linked at hometownheroesradio.com. He joined the Army right after Pearl Harbor, earned some quick promotions as he trained with the 89th Infantry Division at Fort Carson, Colorado, but then put in for a transfer to the Army Air Corps and ended up heading overseas with the initial force of the 466th Bomb Group, which flew out of Attlebridge Field in England. His assignment was to arm the planes and help out in the kitchen, but before long, he had become a substitute tail gunner on bombing missions. What was it like to be way up there in a B-24?
When you fly them, you carry your mask. There's no oxygen up there, you know. But you could hear the sound of it.
Right.
They fly only 25,000 high altitude, you know.
That's why you needed the oxygen.
Yeah.
And these are not pressurized cabins. You need the oxygen, and it was probably pretty cold up there.
Oh, yeah. In my crew, we had maybe 20 planes in this squadron, and no have names on it. One of the planes that was my favorite plane is the Ghost. The other one was the Sister Baby. And the other one, that Lady Lightning, that's the one that was shut down in Holland. Every plane had their name, you know.
With some pretty entertaining nose art, I'm sure. You mentioned finding out that guys weren't coming back. Was there ever a moment where you thought, I might not be coming back?
Yeah, because they were pretty rough at the beginning. Those Germans were pretty well set up in the ground with the AK gun, and they had them all over, you know, so their planes were shot all kind of holes in it. We had to mend them, put some rivets around it and mend it. Some planes were full of holes. And I come pretty close to get killed there, you know. They hit the fuselage on my plane pretty bad, you know.
So you were on the plane.
I was in the plane.
You're flying a mission as a tail gunner. And did you know the guys you were flying with? Had you ever flown with them before?
No. I flied whenever the substitute, you know.
How many times do you think that happened?
I went up 16 times.
I
know. Guys that make 35 missions, they send them back to the States. Complete their missions.
Right.
A year and a half after I was there, the group made 100 missions. So they figured in 100 missions, they destroyed quite a bit of it over there.
Mm-hmm.
And 100 missions, there's a lot of fire. The group make a big party. They brought the stars from Hollywood. I don't know how they went up there during the war. I don't know how they got there. Nick Rooney.
Uh-huh.
A lot of stars, they wear a bomb once. They celebrate for 2 days. They drink, I don't know how many gallons of English beer.
This was mid-August 1944, and this big party for the 466th Bomb Group having completed 100 missions. And I read Glenn Miller and his band were there to perform.
Yeah, he was there. Mick Rooney. Oh, a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
I went up there and was too crowded, you know. They had this big hunger, and they go to town and gather all the girls they can get. You know. All over. There were trucks full of girls. They knew about this party. I didn't know about the party.
All the British girls, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They brought a girl from town, a bunch of nice-looking girls.
So those were some of the times you wanted to remember, but there were other things that weren't quite so pleasant, like the threat of buzz bombs, these flying bombs launched from the other side of the English Channel, sometimes as many as 100 a day heading toward England.
We can tell when they come in because they make funny noise, you know. You can hear 2-3 miles away, you know. You know the.
But when the noise stops, that's when you get out of the way, right?
Yeah. They hear a nearby big farm where these guys raise those barbed wire horses.
Clydesdales?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They carry a big wheel, like one horse carry a carriage. They raise red beet and sugar beet, and they hit that poor guy and kill all their horses, you know.
Yeah, you think about the buzz bombs in the urban settings and all the damage they did in London, but it.
Yeah.
It hit rural spots too. When I asked you about, were there some times where you wondered if you were going to come home? You mentioned being in the bomber, in the B-24, and getting shot at.
Yeah.
What are you doing during that time?
Well, you travel maybe 4 hours before you hit the target.
Right.
You're just thinking, when is it going to start, you know? You're not anxious to see them, but you're in the lookout for them.
Looking for fighters, enemy fighters.
Yeah. Once you hit near the target, then what you have to be wary about. But I never got scared, never. Anyway, I'm going to get killed. There's no way to survive, no way. Because you're in the middle of Germany. When Germany captured all these towns, like Yugoslavia, Belgium, they took all the people out of town. And that's where they built their facilities. Right in every town, they had like tank factory, plane factory, missile factories. In every town, they have projects going that never finished.
So you said you were never scared. Did you have enemy fighters that came at your plane?
Yeah, a few. A few, they come out, no.
And you shot at them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Think you hit anything?
Oh, yeah. I hit a few of them. They come near you, you know. They go up, down. But we had the fighters, too, that fight with them while we going, no. But still some shot at the plane, no.
So you guys had fighter escorts to protect the bombers. Yeah. But even then, some of the German fighters made their way through that.
Oh, yeah.
And you had to fire your tail gun at them.
That's right.
But they were firing at you. And your plane got shot up a little bit?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was pretty bad.
How close did it come to you?
Gee, I don't know. Bullets are all over.
And fighter planes are one thing, but I imagine the flak was probably more consistent. I bet just about every mission that you went on, you encountered some anti-aircraft fire from the ground.
Yeah, almost, yeah. Unless we bomb where they don't have it.
But when they do have it, this is what I'm curious about, because you're in that plane. You're not in control of the plane. Even the guys who are, they can't dodge anything. They're flying straight ahead in formation.
Yeah.
And you know that that flak is coming your way.
Oh, yeah.
So what's going through your mind as you're prepared to fly through this field of flak?
One time I mentioned that if we fly lower than that, we can survive. And you can save a lot of people. I mentioned to my friend, why don't they fly Charlie Mason's better.
So your thought was fly lower and the range of the anti-aircraft guns wouldn't be set right. And you mentioned a term there that a lot of our listeners probably have never heard before. Trolley missions. Those were low-level missions, and pretty much the whole 8th Air Force flew them in Europe the final week of the war, and even after the Nazis had surrendered. The idea was to reduce the normal crew of a bomber and fill the rest of the spots with ground personnel who had been overseas for months and months, even years, and now would get an aerial view of the results of all their hard work. So everybody from cooks and bakers to crew chiefs and mechanics got the chance to fly in bombers and take aerial photographs at low altitude. Unfortunately, there were some planes shot down on some of those trolley missions, including one from Martin Martinez's squadron. He lost a friend that day. And I know you say it wasn't too scary for you, that you were resigned, that what was going to happen was going to happen, but you faced plenty of danger when you flew, and even when you were on the ground in Attlebridge, whether it was arming planes or helping out in the kitchen, you still had to face that ever-present danger of buzz bombs or German bombers coming over at night.
At night, it was all blackout.
Right.
Blackout. No light. Where I live is a place about this big for 4 guys. The windows was painted with black paint, about this thick, no. Best light than the casino light in there. You couldn't even light a cigarette. You couldn't even light nothing. They tell us those guys can see you anything, but...
Mm-hmm. When you think back about the time that you spent in the military during World War II, what are you the most proud of?
More proud of it? I'm proud because, I come home and people were waiting for me. I was very proud. The bus driver said when I came, where I live here was about 20 families, and says, Martin is coming home. We saw Martin in Santa Fe this morning. Coming this way, and then my mom and the people that Martin is coming home, and the next bus, and about 50 people waiting for me up there by the highway, hugging and crying, and I wear that suit, you know, real sharp, you know. The first soldier that got home, that was me.
Mm-hmm.
My brother got home 2 weeks later. See, my brother fought with the 45th Division.
Oh, really?
Up there by going up to North Africa, and Sicily, that's where they started.
Yeah.
And four of the people that with him came home. So four of the guys from Hispaniola came. The other guys didn't make it. That was my brother's division. Those guys fought all the time, all the time.
What was your brother's name?
Tom.
Was he older or younger?
Yeah, he was older.
So you come home from this war, you meet your wife, start a family?
Yeah, I started another life, you know. I just forgot about military anymore, you know, that's it. Once you get discharged, you and your room, when you get home, you take the suit off, because that's no good. And you turn it yourself, you're on the civilian life already, you know. Military don't have nothing to do with guys anymore. You start a new life, but I haven't forgot where I was, you know.
One thing that comes to mind for me, knowing that you came back home and you met your wife and you had a family, and now there's kids and grandkids and great-grandkids who wouldn't be here if you didn't survive the war. Have you ever thought about that?
Never thought about it.
When you're gone, what should they remember about World War II and what you and your brother and 16 million other Americans in uniform did?
Well, what I think about all them boys that were staying there, they would have been just about my age. And the poor kids, you know, had to leave home just to get killed. And they never come back. That's what I think, that after they're born and their family here and then they come back, you know, I feel terrible about it, you know, because they miss all this. They missed all this time like me, you know. I really love this part of the world myself. I feel kind of bad about it. Poor guys, and I feel bad for their families también, you know, because they used to come and ask me about them. I said, at the beginning they were with me, but when I left, I have no information for you kids, you know, that got killed over there. They come home and ask me every day, crying, the mother and the brothers, come on, Martin, tell us about it, about my boy. I says, when I separated from them, I wasn't the best training with them, but I don't know nothing about them.
Because they were killed in the infantry.
Yeah.
And you weren't there. Do you think that what you did was important?
I guess so, because when you go there, you got to do your part and not take good care of the other boys, you know.
I just want to say thank you for serving our country.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for telling us your story.
Thank you very much.
Is there anything that we didn't talk about that was important to you?
No, just that I don't think I'll never get my medal.
Well, we are going to make sure that happens, especially since Mr. Martinez has his DD-214, his separation form that lists the medals he's due. He might even have a few others in store for him that weren't listed on that form from 71 years ago. And maybe there's a parallel to your family right there also. Maybe Father's Day is an excuse to talk to your dad or grandpa about his military service. And if there is some unfinished business, what a blessing you can be by helping him tie up those loose ends. We covered a lot of territory today, and one thing I love about doing this show is that as much as there are parallels between all these veteran stories, that some of them are pretty similar, each one has a unique story and a unique perspective. And the details they add to our understanding always leaves us a little clearer on the big picture of World War II and the bottom line. So many of us wouldn't be here if our dads or granddads hadn't safely made it home. And for all of us, the freedom we have would not exist without the men and women who have risked their lives and way too often given their lives to preserve it. One final Father's Day thought. You've heard a lot about Honor Flight here, even today with Mel and Carol, who took that journey from Las Vegas. Volunteers are making this happen all over the country, including wherever you're listening today. So especially if you have a dad or grandpa who served in World War II and time is running short, I can't think of a better Father's Day gift than to sign them up for this free, life-changing experience. I have those links for you at hometownheroesradio.com. We're out of time for now, but thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you one more time that freedom is not free.